Welcome into another edition of American Ag Today, produced by the American Ag Network. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. While the domestic rail transportation network is vital to moving agricultural products and goods, the cost of shipping commodities on domestic rail systems is rising, and it's putting pressure on U.S. farmers and ranchers' bottom lines. Daniel Munch, associate economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation, says rail rates on agricultural goods have risen as much as 18%.
One of the main takeaways from our research was a clear increase in the cost of shipping agricultural commodities on domestic rail systems. Rail rates on corn have gone up 13%, on soy have gone up 11%, and on wheat 7% over the past 5 years. Similarly, rates to transport ethanol have increased 18%, or about 4 cents a gallon.
Much to his surprise, Munch said the rising cost of fuel wasn't a primary driver of the higher cost of shipping freight via railroad.
Adjusted for inflation, rail fuel costs have remained quite similar to 2018 and 2019 rates, unlike what consumers are experiencing at the pump. They have increased quite a bit in the past year, but mainly as a comeback from COVID-19 related demand shocks. Additionally, demand for freight rail, from the ag sector at least, has remained steady over the past 5 years, with a few spikes associated with increased exports. So overall, fuel and transportation demand were not clear pressures for increased rail rates.
Munch analyzed shipping rates by origin and destination states. In both cases, Munch said states east of the Mississippi River had the highest increases. Reduced competition in the rail market is also playing a role in the rising cost.
In the ag sector, we found that over the past 15 years, non-competitive rail movements or routes not subject to strong competition have increased from 20% of revenue to about 43% of revenue. When there's limited competitive forces, this can incentivize price-setting behavior and disproportionately impact rail customers, like farmers and ranchers, limited in their ability to choose other options to transport their goods.
You can learn more about the report and other market insights online at fb.org/marketintel. The extreme heat from this summer had a significant impact on the canola crop across the Pacific Northwest. According to Karen Sowers, executive director of the PNW Canola Association, the effects on winter and spring canola were consistent across the region. She notes that winter canola yields are down 10 to 40% from last year. Meanwhile, the dry land spring canola, which is still being harvested in places, may be one-third to a half of 2020's yield. She notes yields have not been the only thing impacted by the extreme heat of 2021.
It's been dry for so long, yet the seed is sprouting in the pod. And now we're also hearing reports in the last couple of weeks about a lot of new growth on the bottom of the plant, like the plant's thinking, okay, it's a little bit cooler, I'm going to put out some more pods, and it's way too late.
Sauer says that has not stopped growers from getting their winter canola in the ground, especially in Montana and Washington. There have been many reports of dryland farmers quickly sowing their winter canola following rainstorms.
If a farmer has both winter wheat and winter canola on his farm, or spring canola and spring wheat or barley, the canola is performing just as well, and in many cases better, than the grain crop.
Sauer says as growers look to plant, they need to consider what fertilizers and pesticides may remain due to a lack of rain, which could limit plant growth. She adds that producers negatively impacted by this summer's heat or drought need to contact their crop insurer or their local FSA office. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack expecting to see little impact on Midwest grain shipping through Gulf Coast ports from Hurricane Ida. Vilsack was asked about Mississippi River shipping through the Gulf after reports that Hurricane Ida damaged grain facilities owned by Cargill and rival shippers CHS, ADM, and Bungie.
As you probably know, we are headed towards a record export year, and it's my understanding that while there's going to be some disruption, that it's not going to be so critical as to significantly curtail our capacity to export.
Ida disrupted corn and soybean exports from the Mississippi Gulf Coast, which Reuters reported accounts for some 60% of U.S. grain exports, adding that the impact occurs as global supplies are tight and demand from China is strong. But again, Vilsack says he isn't worried.
But at this point, I'm fairly convinced we're not going to see major disruptions to our exports.
ADM and CHS were working to divert grain exports through other terminals, fearing weeks before power gets restored to Gulf facilities, while Bungie was in the process of reopening an export elevator. And also, Iowa Representative Cindy Axne announced she secured $1 billion in funding for biofuels infrastructure spending in the House's first draft of the Build Back Better Act. The goal of the funding is to support the expanded availability and use of renewable fuels. She says it's a great thing for rural communities, the ag economy, the planet, and for hundreds of thousands of Americans whose jobs will be supported by the investment. Axne said, quote, "Make no mistake, this was no easy fight. For months, I've been helping teach others in D.C. about some of the key advantages of biofuels, including the fact that it's been proven to be twice as clean as fossil fuels, end quote. The Iowa representative says, while she won't announce her final decision on whether she'll support the package until she sees the full bill, seeing the investments included in the legislation will be a critical part of her choice. House committees are beginning to consider their sections of the Build Back Better Act, which tackles a range of issues like infrastructure, healthcare, education, and climate. Included in the initial draft is $1 billion in funding for the USDA to provide grants over the next 8 years to expand biofuel infrastructure. The American Farm Bureau Federation, 46 state farm bureaus, and 280 organizations representing family-owned agribusinesses sent a letter to congressional leaders about tax policies. The letter asks them to leave important tax policies in place as they draft legislation implementing President Biden's Build Back Better agenda. The letter addresses four key tax provisions that make it possible for farmers and ranchers to survive and pass their businesses on to the next generation: estate taxes, stepped-up basis, the 199A small business deduction, and like-kind exchanges. The letter says, quote, the policies Congress enacts now will determine agricultural producers' ability to secure affordable land to start or expand their operations. Regardless of whether a business has already been passed down through multiple generations or is just beginning, the key to their longevity is a continued ability to transition when a family member or business partner dies, end quote. For this reason, the groups firmly believe the current federal estate tax code provisions must be maintained. These tools are as crucial as ever because the number of farmers and ranchers 65 and over outnumbers those under 35 by 4-1. Over 370 million acres of land will change hands in the next 2 decades. And also here on American Ag Today, the National Pork Producers Council called on Congress to include language to expand the existing H-2A visa to year-round ag laborers in a budget reconciliation bill set to get voted on Monday in the House. Like many sectors of the economy, the U.S. pork industry is faced with a severe labor shortage. But even before COVID-19, the industry was having trouble filling jobs, a situation generally attributable to urbanization and an aging rural population. A tight labor market prompted the pork sector to rely on foreign-born workers. Now, NPPC President Jen Sorensen said, quote, the U.S. pork industry is highly dependent on foreign-born workers, but current visa programs don't provide access to enough workers to meet the labor needs on our farms and in packing plants. We need a dedicated year-round workforce, end quote. The group wants lawmakers to open the current H-2A temporary and seasonal worker visa program to year-round labor without a limit on the annual number of visas, and to provide legal status for agricultural workers already in the country. Legislation approved earlier this year in the House would expand the program to year-round workers but cap the number of visas that can get issued each year. And this has been another edition of American Ag Today, produced by the American Ag Network. I'm Jesse Allen, wishing you a great day.